Arrancamos esta hora das 5 precisamente com The Album Live Fine, The Outer Banks. É uma das bandas também de inspiração de Will Sampson que nos faz companhia esta semana aqui na Radar para esta quarta-feira, dia 28 de setembro. Também foi um miminho aqui da casa para acompanhá-lo, visto que ele também tem estado em tour com os Album Live algumas vezes já e existe um gosto mútuo dos seus trabalhos. É com ele que ficamos também, é claro, na Radar e como costumamos fazer sempre por aqui nos 97.8, vamos precisamente então falar com ele. Mas primeiro ele vai tocar uma canção do seu repertório. Hi Will, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
So which song you have to us? The first song?
The first song is Echo Spring.
So ready when you are.
Comes beyond the grass plateau. Past and bottle, I know it was far before the smaller stars gave out, before the smaller stars gave out. Comes beyond the grass plateau, past and bottle. I know it was far.
Ao vivo na Radar.
Radar.
Will Sampson, então, connosco na Radar, aqui a dar conta do seu primeiro tema que está a tocar e tocou aqui no showcase da Radar ao vivo. Echo Spring foi a primeira canção, ainda tem mais uma para nos dar conta ao longo desta também entrevista e passagem aqui pelos 97.8 e também online em radarlisboa.fm. Will, how are you again after the first song? So, let's talk about the music, mm-hmm. of course, Active Imagination, the latest record, also the two new songs, EP, the piano versions of it, but let's start from the beginning. How it was the connection to Portugal was made? Some sort of dreaming with Portugal, but also you have the opportunity to work in Porto for your album. How it was that connection made with Portugal, with our country?
At first it was kind of random. So like the first time in Portugal was, I went to Porto to basically like record the vocals for an album called Ground Luminosity.
Yeah.
So that was in January 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time I was living in England and I just really wanted to find like a different space to be in to finish this album. And so it was, I had obviously heard about Porto before and really just chose it quite randomly.
Yeah.
And
it has coast, let's go there.
Yeah,
some
kind of. Yeah,
some
I didn't realize
like that.
I didn't realize this thing about Portuguese homes being so cold in the winter.
Yeah.
So like, I was freezing. I was really, you know, like the typical British tourist, like, thinks everywhere, like, south of England is going to be warm and
warmer.
Sunny, but it wasn't. But it was still a good experience. And then I came back a few times over the following years, like to play some shows, and I made a couple more records in Lisbon after that, and so I just got a bit more familiar with Portugal over the years, and now I'm here.
But it wasn't easy, your experience with Lisbon in Portugal.
Oh, the first time.
The first time and the second time you're in Lisbon making the album, right?
So the first time was fine. I was just really cold.
Yeah, it was just cold.
Yeah. But the second time,
It was cold in heart?
No, it was really hot the second time. But I had this, I think we don't have enough time to tell the whole story, but I basically had this accident where I like fell onto my face and knocked all of my front teeth and was in hospital for a couple of days. And then, had like a huge cut on the inside of my mouth and had to have braces to put like my teeth back together.
Yeah.
So I ended up making an instrumental EP because I couldn't really sing, and then a few months after that, when everything was healed, I ended up making a record called Welcome Oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
That was, even though it had been a really difficult time in Lisbon, that album was really like a pretty magical experience because the whole thing just appeared in like just over a week.
It was some sort of a healing process, right? That album for you.
For sure, yeah.
Wow. And also, how do you manage to come back to Portugal now and live it? Because it wasn't easy, because the cost of living in Portugal isn't cheap.
Yeah, but I come from the UK, so
So it's cheaper.
It's
and now it's cheaper.
Well, actually, I mean, the most difficult thing was because of Brexit, really.
Yeah.
So it was a lot harder to come here compared to previous years, but I was really determined to leave the UK, so I did it.
And
it took a long time, but
and you are happy with it.
I am,
yeah.
More to please.
It shows. So talking about the music, you've done some albums instrumentally, and also with vocals. It's more challenging to do melodies, vocal melodies, and also the lyric side of it, because it's much more easier for you to do the process of producing and also the arrangements for the songs, right?
Yeah, it's like, I think it's something about the human voice is, it's always gonna take your attention. It's always gonna like sit at the center of the music. And so when I first started singing, it was really just to add like another sound. It wasn't about wanting to become a singer, so
it was like a layer, right? Another layer,
exactly. So it's nice it does feel very easy to write instrumental music because you don't have to think about this texture of the voice that's always going to get everyone's attention.
Yeah.
That's just the nature of singing, mm-hmm. you know. And then you just don't have to think about song structure or anything like that when you're making instrumental music. But then it's a very different experience. I think I wouldn't say it's more satisfying, but it's often feels like more of an achievement to yep. make an album with like vocals that you're happy with.
Because it's difficult to say something in the songs that it has a meaning, right? Because you want to translate the feeling the most accurate possible, and in words it's not too easy like in music, right?
Yeah, but I know like other people, not just me, sometimes write a song and it might be months later that they figure out what it's really about. So I definitely spend a long time thinking about lyrics and making sure that I'll feel proud looking back on those lyrics in a few years' time. But I don't think you have to worry too much about being very specific about mm-hmm. the song meaning, as long as it stirs some emotion with it. As long as it feels right, that's all it comes down to.
If only it's truth for you, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I always think that, you know, if you're really trying to be as authentic as possible, then you have almost no control over like what music comes out. You know, like you just kind of let it come out mm-hmm. and that's what it is. You know, if I decided to make like a dance record next week, for example, even if I was really excited about it, I wouldn't feel like very authentic because it'd be coming from my head rather than a thing about feeling. Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to you to write some songs and let them go, let them go to another song, and choosing not to do that song or not to picking that lyric now and for other stuff, for other time, for other project, or with another guy to make some sense of it.
Yeah, like often like the songs will transform in like three or four different ways before they end up on the finished album. Like even with the last album, I thought it was nearly done, and then I realized I just wasn't feeling like completely excited about it, I suppose, and then I basically just remade the whole album from the beginning again. And it seemed like such a pain at the time, but I had to do it, and I'm really glad that I did.
And do you feel that was the starting point for that album? Not the process of going to there and rewrite it, but it started when you decided to rewrite the album?
Yeah, I just realized that I hadn't, at that time, like when I made the first demos, I just was getting too comfortable. I suppose I just hadn't pushed myself enough, and then like it really largely came down to self-confidence, and there was certain things on the album that I couldn't have done before because I didn't have the confidence to do it. Mm-hmm. Whether it's about feeling more confident with production or with singing or just like all kinds of ideas. And I think to rewrite everything, it's there's a lot of like internal emotional work that goes on with that as well. So it was a turning point for sure.
And do you easily find the state of mind to composing? Because, for instance, some experiences you have with the floating tank, for instance, or with microdosing mushrooms to do something of the tracks. Do you find the right process to that state of mind, to the creativity to emerge?
It's, you definitely can't force it. Like with the flotation tanks, for example, I know people that have, like, friends who I recommended it to, and they didn't particularly enjoy it. But for me at the time, it was an incredible experience. And I just, so I really made this conscious thought of like trying to create that feeling with music. And that might just be like the starting point, and then it could change completely. Mm-hmm. I guess it's like if you want to make a painting and you're just like, okay, I'll start with green, and that's it. And it might end up completely different when it's mm-hmm. finished, but sometimes all it takes is like a seed.
Yeah.
And the microdosing experience was, I tried it a couple of times actually. The second time I didn't feel like it had a huge effect, but the first time was really incredible, and I just suddenly finished all these songs that had been sat on my tape machines on my computer for months and months. And that was, I can't, like, I'm not gonna tell everyone to go and do it, but yeah, personally it was very helpful with writing music.
It's like to arrange or to manage the process that you need to do for that song, that album, that music. That's your own truth to making music, right? Because it has to come from the inside.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, because I've been doing music for so long, I've obviously seen so many trends come and go. And I often think about even friends of mine who are musicians who, you know, they might get swept up in like a certain sound and then release music that is very popular at the time, and it never seems to last. And I think even if you have a lot of success with it, the flip side of that is I think, at least from people I know, they feel a little bit empty sometimes, because it wasn't about making music because you really need to express yourself. It was about something else.
The Active Imagination album, how it was the starting point lyrically to imagine the album. It was on the same side of the music. It was from the vocal melodies. How it was for you?
It usually starts with, there's actually a specific term for this, but I never remember what it is. I basically just start singing sounds, so like the melody comes first, and then there'll be some key words that I put down, and then just slowly build around that. And but then on top of that, at the time I was also, because we were all in lockdown when I was making this album, and I thought a really nice way to try and escape lockdown would be to lucid dream, or try and learn how to lucid dream at least. And part of that practice is you have to keep a dream journal. And then one day I realized that, oh my god, I have all of these lyrics here. They're just I just turned these the dream diary like became the lyrics often.
You can write Sandman the second season.
I can try.
Now you have released this EP with the piano versions. How it was for you to enjoy doing that and to expose yourself to doing that?
It's so I have a friend from Berlin called Florian who helped me record my first album like 10 years ago, and for 10 years he's been telling me like, please release some music that's just your voice and just one instrument. And again, like, I just think I didn't have the confidence to do it before. And I mean, I've definitely gotten more comfortable with singing over the years, and maybe it just took me a long time. But it just started small, like doing radio sessions like this where I'm not surrounded with tons of my gear and a violinist and lots of effects. It made me realize like, oh, I can make it work in a different way. And so it went from an experiment to something that ended up being released.
And now you're touring, right?
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, touring, it's still such still, a strange yeah. thing.
You come to home, then you're going to other countries, right?
Yeah, and it's nice to, it's really nice to spread it out this way, actually. It wasn't really planned, but, you know, in the past, I would do what everyone else did. You'd release a record and then do maybe 20 shows in a row and then wait another few months and play again, and it's exhausting. And it's also, it's just not, it's still not really possible, you know, coming out of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Things are still very difficult in many ways. And I have, however, discovered that it's actually really nice to like play a few shows, go back home,
rest,
play a few shows. Yeah. Otherwise, you just, it can be a massive anticlimax and really exhausting.
Yeah, yeah. So what are the next shows for you, Will?
The next show is in Paris,
yeah.
And then a couple in...
Paris is sold out, right?
No, that's Antwerp.
Antwerp, yeah.
So Paris, a couple of shows in Belgium, then I go back home and then go to Germany and Prague, and then now working on things for next year.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and also you played with Beatrice de Clark, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the tour? Just the two of us?
Just the
two of them?
I've actually played with, I think, 5 different violinists on the shows this year, which wasn't planned. I always used to play with the same person, Beatrice, who's also a very close friend. But
she's also really requested, right?
Well, she's... just too busy.
Yeah.
And like she basically, you know, she has a family now and touring's too difficult, and it's fun playing. Yeah. It's an interesting experience, I'll say that.
Yeah. But you still come to Beatrice when it's need to be done some new songs, because that connection that you have with her?
Yeah. Like she'll play with me in Belgium, for example, and I'm sure like we will be recording together for as long as I'm making music.
Okay, so we do not have Beatrice here, but it's gonna be a minimalistic side of the next song to showcase to us, mm-hmm. and to say goodbye to us. It's a certain surprise, mm-hmm. right? Will Sampson. Na Radar, Will Sampson, não só aqui a falar de Active Imagination, mas também de todo o seu trajeto, que já vão lá 10 aninhos disto, como estávamos aqui a falar. A tour que vai passar e continua a passar pela Europa, Antuérpia, a Paris, a Bélgica, está também tudo no site de Will Sampson, podem acompanhar o seu trabalho e o seu trajeto. O mais recente trabalho, Active Imagination, já passou por aqui pela Radar, na Discopátria, também lançou um EP de 2 canções com 2 versões apenas ao piano, que recomendo vivamente, uma das quais RP, que ouvimos ainda há pouco também aqui de fundo, e estivemos então à conversa com Will Sampson a falar um bocadinho também do seu processo criativo para cada um dos discos, não só auto-infligindo-se em situações para conseguir criar da melhor maneira. Falámos aqui de um tanque de flutuação, falámos também de microdosing de cogumelos para conseguir também disputar essa criatividade, mas mais do que tudo, isto também para traduzir um pouco da conversa que fizemos aqui em inglês no estúdio da Radar, também o seu processo criativo passa muitas vezes por encontrar a sua própria verdade, ser genuíno, passar cá para fora o sentimento que lhe vai pela cabeça e que vai-lhe pelo coração também em determinado momento, e encontrar... digamos assim, o starting point, o clique, o arranque para depois começar a compor com algumas palavras que vocaliza para começar a ganhar as melodias de voz, e depois vai começando a trabalhar nas músicas a partir daí. É um resumo ligeiro e lisonjeiro, mas depois podem ouvir, reouvir se quiserem, podcast em radarlisboa.fm. Vai lá estar esta entrevista, assim como este showcase, não só a primeira canção que Will Sampson trouxe até nós, Echo Spring, mas também A Certain Surprise, com o qual se despede. Will, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
So ready when you are.
Ao vivo, na Radar.
Radar.